We want to summarize the book this morning. For you that are not acquainted with what we've been doing, we're trying to go through an entire book, sort of a flyover, to see what the essence of it is, and try to summarize. By the way, trying to summarize a book is much harder than trying to do detail. You'd think it would be the opposite. But trying to pull together the things that are really important that give the meaning of the book are very difficult, and I hope you find this very helpful. Notice on the predominant features of Hebrews, we've got the theme, the purpose, the emphasis, and the exhortation. And we're trying to bring these things out as tremendously important to this book. If we were studying the book of Galatians as we are, or the book of Romans as we have, the emphasis would be on the work of Jesus Christ. When you go to the book of Hebrews, the emphasis is on the person of the book of the of Christ. And therefore, its theme revolves about the glories of Jesus Christ. And if you look at chapter 1, you notice he begins with a very heavy section on the things that we know about the person of Christ. Hebrews chapter 1. And notice by the end of the first three verses, you have Christ exalted to the very highest place. God, after he spoke long ago to the fathers and the prophets in many portions and in many ways, in these last days has spoken to us in his Son, whom he has appointed heir of all things, through whom he also made the world. And he is the radiance of his glory and the exact representation of his nature, and upholds all things by the word of his power. When he had made purification of sins, sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. And as the theme of the book of Hebrews is begun here, and notice within even three verses, you have not the work of Christ, but you have Christ from his career standpoint, of his birth, his death, his burial, his resurrection, and then he takes his seat. I think you got one of them in the... Brian, you want to see if... That's a little unusual sound. If it's your child who is in the heat vent, we'll retrieve him for you. That the book of Galatians and the book of Romans both would start at the cross and the resurrection. The book of Hebrews begins with Christ seated at the right hand of the Father. And therefore, the theme is very much what Christ is doing now. There is a key word that comes into expressing the deity of Christ. One is absolute statement about who he is. For example, through whom he made the world. That's an absolute statement. But there is a different way that Hebrews has of showing the superiority of Jesus Christ. And it's through the words, better than. Notice verse 4. Having become as much better than the angels. Chapter 3 and verse 3. For he has been counted worthy of more glory than Moses. And then you have chapter 4 and verse 8. For if Joshua had given them rest, they would have not have spoken of another day, And so the emphasis is on he's better than angels, he's better than Moses, he's better than Joshua, and he keeps comparing him back to the Old Testament and showing the superiority of the person of Christ. And that is the theme. What is the purpose of the book of Hebrews? I think that would be best expressed by looking at one verse, and that is chapter 6, verse 1. Chapter 6, verse 1. 12 times in the book of Hebrews is an emphasis on the maturity of the believer. 12 times the maturity of the believer is encouraged. Chapter 6, verse 1, therefore, leaving the elementary teaching about Christ, let us press on to maturity. And we should really put that down as the purpose of the book of Hebrews is to bring the believer to maturity. And may I say, there is no book, when meditated upon carefully, that is more maturing, more stabilizing than the book of Hebrews. Romans is wonderful for the doctrine of justification and certainly the doctrine of sanctification. But Hebrews is the book of maturity. And it brings about maturity by simply saying, look at who Christ is. And as you see who he is, you'll grow into Christ's likeness. The emphasis of the book of Hebrews, is on the position of Christ at the Father's right hand. In other words, we ought to sit here this morning and say this, what is Jesus Christ now doing? We tend to think, we have communion. And at communion, we look backwards at what he did at the cross. And much of our thanks and praise centers on what he did. He dies for us, not Hebrews. The book of Hebrews is who he is and what he is doing now. This is expressed, for example, in chapter 7. And verse 25. Hence also, he is able to save forever those who draw near to God through him, since he always lives to make intercession for them. What is Jesus Christ doing right now? Now, in terms of emphasis, if I would say, what has Jesus Christ done, you could probably do a pretty good job of pointing out what he did for us at the cross. Could you answer this question well? What is he now doing this morning? What is he doing for you? And Hebrews 7:25 talks about his intercession, what is involved in all of that. The exhortation of the book of Hebrews. The book of Hebrews makes a great emphasis on doctrine, but that is not the major emphasis of Hebrews. The emphasis of Hebrews is what you ought to mix with doctrine. And therefore, it is learning to put faith to doctrine. It is looking at what we believe and attaching to it faith. And he emphasizes that this is part of the believer's daily walk. We remind ourselves of what he has done. We remind ourselves of what he is doing, and we put faith to it. And the great chapter on that would be Hebrews chapter 4. In Hebrews chapter 4, he said God made the promises, God made the provision. The problem with Israel is they did not mix faith with their doctrine. Look at chapter 3 and 4. You end up chapter 3, verse 19. And so we see that they were not able to enter into his rest, or able in, to enter, because of unbelief. And so it's failure in the Christian life through failure to mix faith with what we believe. Second, notice the glories of Christ in Hebrews chapter 2, Hebrews chapter 1. And let me note something about each of the six things that we have said. Chapter 1, verse 1. God, after he spoke long ago to the fathers in the prophets and in many portions and in many ways, in these last days has spoken to us in his Son. And notice with the word Son in your English Bible, you have the word his in italics. What that means, then, is it is not there in the original. And therefore, the word son is without an article. It is an anarthrous. Now, let me make a little comparison in English and in the Greek language. In English, we have two ways to treat a noun. We can have a noun that is articular, such as in they man or a man. We also have the word man without an article. In Greek, you have something a little different. You have the articular, the man, and like in English, you have the word man without an article. And that always means this. It always means the character, the nature, the character, the nature, the essence. And so, reading that with this in mind, Hebrews chapter 1, verse 2, in these last days has spoken to us in one who has the son-like character, or who has the son essence, or who has the son attributes. And so the emphasis in this is on the attributes of the son. And so you really have the whole section headed by the word son, and following that, the characteristics, the nature, the attributes of the son. And they are six. One, he is heir of all things. He is heir of all things. And I'm just going to put, to avoid writing, because you've got it in front of you, I'll just put the letter H to give you a reminder on the screen, and then a key passage. If we want to talk about Christ as the heir of everything, there is a key passage. And that key passage is Psalm number 2. And Psalm number 2, like no other passage, is where Christ says, I am the Son. I have the heathen, the world, the earth for my inheritance. It is the key passage on that. Second, he is architect through whom he also made the world. The word world, don't let your mind go to simply the physical universe. This refers to space. And this refers to time. It is equivalent to say, through whom he made everything that is. Both space and time was authored by him. He is the author of the physical world. He is the architect of history. He is the revealer. He is the radiance of his glory. The word radiance is an interesting word. It's a word that means to flash forth. It's a word that means to flash forth. So that he is the flashing forth of his glory. And the word glory is important because the word glory refers in the Old Testament to the presence of God, presence and character of God. So he is the flashing forth of the presence and the character of God. Can you see the difference between this book and the book of Galatians? Galatians is going to talk about what Christ did. This book talks about who Christ is, and it is appreciation of who he is that brings about maturity in the life of the believer. Continuing in verse 3. He is revealer of the character of God. By the way, the word exact representation is an interesting word. If I pronounce it, you'll recognize it in English. It says, verse 2, He is the radiance of His glory and the, one word, character. Character. The character of His nation, of His nature. And therefore, in the fullest sense of the word, He is deity. 4, He is sustainer of all things. Now, when you see the words in verse 3, upholds all things by the word of His power, don't think of an atlas standing with the world on His shoulders, because that is not the picture. The word picture, or the word uphold, is a word that is used for bringing something to its goal. So, sustain in the sense of to bring to its goal. It says that in everything that He does, there is purpose for history. To bring to a goal. How does He bring to a goal? Well, the next thing explains how that is done. And that is when He had made purification for sin, He is doing the act of redemption. So the death on the cross brings both the history of the world and the person of Christ. He shoulders it in order to take it on to His goal. Notice the verse 4, and this continues on through the end of the chapter. He is superior to all things, having become as much better than the angels as He inherited a more excellent name than thee. And therefore, the emphasis is on the superiority. And there's nothing that infiltrates the book of Hebrews more than here is Moses, he is wonderful, here is Christ, he is better. Here is the priesthood of the Old Testament. It was good. Here is the priesthood of Christ. It is much better and superior. And therefore, the teaching of Hebrews is based heavily on the idea of the superiority of Christ. Now, let's take a look at our third point in our outline, and that is the comparisons of the book of Hebrews. And this will give you a little sample of how Christ compares and how He is superior. And let me give you a little sample. There are many of them. But let's put down two columns. And the prototype of the Old Testament priest was Aaron. The New Testament priest is Christ. And He wants us to come to really appreciate the person of Christ. So the way He does it is this. Let's make some of the characteristics of Aaron and then some of the characteristics of Christ. Chapter 7, verse 27. Chapter 7, verse 27. For it was fitting that we should have such a high priest, verse 27, who does not need daily, like those high priests, to offer up sacrifices. And notice the emphasis is on Aaron had to make a sacrifice every day. However, notice the contrast with Christ. Verse 27, who does not need daily, like those high priests, to offer up sacrifices, first for his own sins, and then for the sins of the people, because this he did once for all. Aaron was daily. Christ died for us once for all. Notice teaching by comparison. Number 2. In chapter 8, verse 2. speaks of Christ as a minister in the sanctuary and in the true tabernacle, which the Lord pitched, not man. Christ operates for us in heaven. Aaron operated as a high priest on earth. The comparison shows the similarity. Chapter 8, verse 3. For every high priest is appointed to offer both gifts and sacrifices. Hence, it is necessary that this high priest had something to offer. Now, if he were on earth, he would not be priest at all. And the emphasis is that the sacrifice that the priest made was external. Aaron never, ever climbed on the altar. Aaron never offered himself. Jesus, however, offered himself. The offering was not external, it was personal. Chapter 8, verses 6 and 7. For if that first covenant had been faultless, there would have been no occasion for a second. And so the emphasis is that Aaron operated under a new old covenant. Jesus operates as priest under a new covenant. Chapter 10, verse 1. For the law, since it has only a shadow of good things to come, and not the very form of things, can never by the sacrifices year by year, which they offer continually, make perfect those who draw near. The priesthood of Aaron was a shadow picture. The sacrifice of Jesus was fulfillment and reality. It was fulfillment and reality. And we did not go into any detail on these except to point out, as we look at the book of Hebrews, the method the author employs in order to teach. And the method he uses is to go back to the priesthood of Aaron, for example, and say what characterized it, and then move up and say, look at the superiority of Christ. The key word, better than, superior to, greater than, is the emphasis all the way through the book. The other area in which his superiority is mentioned is through the comparison of a better picture between the tabernacle and all the furniture that's in it. One of the important preparations for a study of the book of Hebrews is Leviticus. When I took Hebrews in Dallas Seminary, we were required, first of all, to translate the book of Leviticus, because all of the imagery that is used in Hebrews is also used in the book of Leviticus. And guys, I gotta stop. I'm sorry.